Now, in the studio today, I have John Pridmore, and he's coming over. He started yesterday, and I'll say good morning to you, John. How are you?
Good morning, Noel. Good morning to your listeners.
This is your second year. How did it go? Started last evening.
Yeah, it was very blessed. It was really full, the church, so it was very blessed. We were very privileged to have a real buzzing church, so it was great.
Mm-hmm. Is it in the form of, I mean, a lot of people might have the impression, but it's not a form of preaching to the extent like sodalities or whatever. It's a more of a giving of information.
Well, I think it's more of a sharing. Like, the idea of a mission really is really to know God's love for us, and I think it's for the whole community, whether you're 5 or 95, to really come along and just experience. We're all lay people, and so it's really experienced people are at the same level. There's a very mixed, diverse community that we, you know, St. Patrick's community. There's 5 of us. One girl's a nurse. Another girl was a scientist. Another guy was in the ICF. My past was quite checkered. Mm-hmm. And the other guy was a barman. So it's a very different sort of walks of background. But I think we just share our stories and how God's love has changed our life with the people who come.
If you could remind our listeners, I know you were in there talking last year, remind our listeners of your background, as you said there, your checkered past.
Yeah, I was like born in Walthamstow, and I was baptised a Catholic, but I was never brought up in any faith. At the age of 10, I was made to choose who I wanted to live with, because my parents told me that they were getting divorced. And I think that I made an unconscious decision inside that I wasn't their love anymore, because I really thought if you don't love, you don't get hurt, because the people I trusted had crushed me. There was a lot of... My mum had a breakdown and my dad remarried, and there was a lot of, like, violence in the family. At 15, I ended up leaving home. I had already started stealing because I wanted someone to take notice of the pain that I was in. I'd already been to detention centre, youth prison. I left home at 15. My only qualification was stealing, so that's what I did. At 19, I was in prison again. And I think the way I dealt with all the abuse I suffered as a kid is I turned that abuse into anger, so I was always fighting. So that period in prison I spent in solitary confinement, which is a bit like having a mirror put in front of you, and all you see is what you don't like about yourself. And I seriously thought about taking God's greatest gift, my own life. But God must have been there, because I didn't take my own life, but I came out of there more angry and more bitter than ever. Met some guys who seemed to have everything. You know, they had the best cars, the best girls. They had this sort of respect. They walked into a club, everyone stopped. Mm-hmm. And I suspect in my naivety, I wanted that power. So I started working for these people, and the first job they give you is to pick up a Land Rover from Dover, and they tell you where it is, give you the keys, and you'd have to bring it back to London, and you get paid $5,000. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you realised it was full of drugs. But after a short space of time, you wasn't working for them, you was working with them. And I was setting up my own jobs, and by the age of 27... I had everything that the world says makes you happy. I had a penthouse flat in St. John's Wood. I had the sports cars, the 7 Series BMW, the Sport Merc convertible, earning thousands of pounds a week. Couldn't spend the money I got. But obviously inside there was a real emptiness, because the way I got all my money was from organised crime. To my shame, I was involved in major drug deals, protection rackets. Like, I used to have a designer leather jacket with a sewn-in inside pocket. And I used to carry a machete in one pocket and CS gas in the other. And I was a paid enforcer, so...
What was the catalyst, to the extent?
I think that what it was is, even though I had everything on the outside, there was this real emptiness within. I was working a club that we part-owned in the West End of London, and I ended up hitting this guy. And the only reason I hit him was to impress an underworld boss who was there. And as I looked at this guy lying on the floor, the only thought that came from my mind is I might get 10 years for this. And as I drove home, I felt, what have I become that I could kill someone and not even care? Because I was so dead inside. I came in a normal night, and it was a normal night. There was nothing special. And I heard this voice speaking to me in my heart, a voice all the listeners know, our conscience, God within us. And I said the first prayer I'd ever said. I said, up to now, all I've done is take from you, God. Now I want to give. And as I said that prayer, I felt the Holy Spirit, the love of God, come pouring into me. The only person I knew out of faith was my mum. And I wouldn't have seen a lot of her in them days. I might give her an expensive present when I felt guilty. Mm-hmm. But this night I went round and told her what had happened to me. She said to me she had prayed for me every single day of my life. And 9 days before this, she had prayed a novena to the patron saint of hopeless cases, Saint Jude. And it was on the 9th day of that novena that I truly believe I heard the voice of God in my heart.
And had you any other time in your life where you sat down and questioned the type of life you were living? Was that the first time?
I think the drugs. I was on crack cocaine. I was smoking dope. I was drinking really heavy. I think that sort of kills your conscience. So I didn't really question it because I was taking the drugs just to get through another day. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? That's what stopped me questioning it.
Oh, well, the next question is, how do you get away from your peers in that sense and the lifestyle that you're... Both from the lifestyle you're used to, which... I mean, it can make you quite comfortable, even though it makes you unhappy, but at the same time, and then the people around you.
Yeah, I couldn't walk away. Like, I wrote my first book, and the guy, I had to change all the names, but a guy in the book who was, he's called Bulldog, he was a bit like a father to me, and I asked him for permission to move away. I told him I had found God, and he said he'd give me permission, which really meant if anyone took me out, mm-hmm. shot me, then his guys would shoot them. Mm-hmm. And he said that's his insurance policy in case there's a God. Well, it's quite interesting because towards the end of his life, he had a bit of a conversion. And I think God gave him his insurance policy, you know. Okay. So, because I kept in touch with him, but I couldn't, you know, I couldn't just walk away. You had to get permission. On the other side of the question, where, you know, my whole life was based on, you know, sin. Everything in my life was corrupt. And so it was a slow process. It wasn't overnight. But slowly I let go of that past and those riches. You know, I think Oxfam shares went up when I converted because I gave a lot of my money to Oxfam. Okay. But it was slowly. It wasn't an overnight conversion. I ended up going to a retreat. And to be honest, I thought a retreat was lying on a beach, Bacardi breezer, joint, nice girl, just chilling for a couple of weeks. But I went to this retreat, and it's there that I really found that personal love of Christ for me. You know, I went to confession. I never thought I'd go to confession in my life. I went to confession, and I just really felt God's mercy in my heart.
Can I ask you there, because I was curious, I was talking to somebody else about this as well, about the retreats. I used to enjoy them when I was much younger and much older than you now, but you sort of get the impression that they haven't really changed, because to me they weren't preachy, but they were enlightening.
And totally,
They weren't preachy and they were more informative than ever.
I think at that retreat that they shared, it wasn't like they were preaching to you or at you, mm-hmm. they were just sharing. And that's what we try and do at the mission, is that we share, God has done this for us. And if you want it, then God will touch our lives, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it's really a sharing, it isn't a preaching. And also, you know, one of the things I was speaking about this morning at Mass was that a lot of us, you know, we don't have a view of ourselves, a good view. You know, we always think we're unworthy. We always think we're low self-esteem. Whereas I actually think God loves every part of me. He thinks I'm great because he created me. And the more I know that, the more happy I become and the more freedom I bring to others. And I think God has that plan for every one of us. Mm-hmm. To really know ourselves, he unconditionally loves us. It doesn't mean whether we're good, bad or indifferent. It just means he unconditionally loves us. Mm-hmm. And I make mistakes every day of my life. I'm always screwing up. I'm always losing my temper. But God never says, I've had enough of you now. He's always patient with me. He's always bringing me to that greater depth. And I think it's true that at those retreats and at our mission, people share, they don't preach.
And how did you come to the idea of actually doing the mission? Was it going to the retreat?
I worked with Mother Teresa, and I had the honour of meeting her on quite a few occasions when I was in the Bronx in New York. Your listeners might remember when she met Princess Diana mm-hmm. in 97, and it was that period when I was in the Bronx. She had a massive effect on me.
Can I ask you what you were doing in the Bronx?
Yeah, I was with these Franciscans at the Renault. You might have seen them on telly, the monks from Moy Ross.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And I was with them and trying my vocation, to be honest. But they work closely with the missionaries of charity. And so that's how I got to meet Mother Teresa. She said lots of stories with us. One thing she said to me, she said, if we give young people the truth, they always have the choice to choose the truth. But if we don't give them the truth, they never have the choice. And my truth was that God loves me. And I felt that was a real commissioning by God to share my story with others. And so that's where I really started doing this work. And then it went on to parish missions, because I thought, why should it just be young people? I've met quite a lot of elderly people who don't know they're loved, who don't know that they're special, who don't have a real joy at being who they are. And I felt the message should be for everyone. And that's really how the missions came about.
And you talk to people after the mission. So what sort of questions, and is there any one question that people ask you all the time?
Yeah, well, in the schools, they normally ask me, have you still got your machete? but, you know, it's a varied response. You know, like, in the schools, it's amazing questions. You know, one sixth former asked me the other day, actually, I was in a school in England, and they just said, what was the most amazing spiritual experience of your life? And, you know, immediately I just said, I started crying, actually, because I was just, and I said, when I went to that first confession, and I thought, I can be forgiven. And when Jesus' mercy touched my heart, changed my life, that was the most. But, you know, another girl, it was in a non-Christian school, and she said, what's heaven? Well, you know, explain to me. And I said, well, heaven to me is eating as much Haagen-Dazs ice cream as you like, eating as much crispy aromatic duck, and you don't put on an ounce. But I said, and she said, I like your heaven. But I said, no, really, heaven for me is where you times every good feeling you've ever felt in your life a billion times, and you're not even close to what heaven's like.
Do you find any sort of cynicism from anybody at all?
I find that, you know, I never judge people, like, you know, because to me, I was that person. And, you know, you get kids who say, well, I don't believe in God. And I say, well, nor did I. But ask him. Ask him to show you that he loves you. But I've never, because I share my story, I think it's almost gives people a respect that they never really trounce you, because you're sharing something very personal and something very beautiful. So I've never been ridiculed for, in the schools you could hear a pin drop. And, you know, the emails, I was saying this in the church this morning, I did a school in Barren Furness on Friday, and I drove nearly 8 hours for this. I was giving out to God no end. but when I got back, I read an email from one of the kids there, and he's 16-year-old. He said, when you came into my school, I was an atheist. I didn't believe in God. But when you led us in the prayer, and the prayer was really, show us you love us, Jesus. He said, I felt God's love for me, and it's changed my life. Well, that's what I live for, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So you travel in all over Ireland, and as well as all over England. How far the afield do you go as well?
Well, like, I've been 16 countries this year.
Okay.
And I'm still going to New York, Mexico, Los Angeles, Phoenix, Arizona, and then Chicago. And then back to Ireland. That's just for our trip over Christmas. So I travel in a lot of countries. I do talks. I spoke at World Youth Day a few years ago in Sydney to 500,000 young people. And it's probably the biggest gathering of people there is. And that really opened up all the doors around the world, that I get a lot of invites to share my story. I've wrote 3 books, and 2 of them are bestsellers. One's an international bestseller, my first book. So again, I get a lot of invites on the back of the books. To go.
And do you find the same thing within everybody, no matter what country they're from? Everybody's
very much
searching
yeah.
for something.
I do. I find that there's a real, you know, desire to be loved. I think every one of us has a desire to be loved. And I think Blessed Pope John Paul II said, the person who gives us desire in our hearts to search for him is Jesus. And no matter what we receive from this world, we will never be truly fulfilled or satisfied until we have a personal, loving relationship with him. Well, I had everything. There was nothing you could want more materialistically, power-wise, promiscuous-wise. You know, I was with girls every other night. Nothing fulfilled me. But now I've never been so happy. I've never been so complete. And I think that search is in everyone, to find that personal relationship. God loves me.
Okay, can I ask you a personal question, though? I mean, we have Father here beside us from Airfield Parish as well. But as regards finding God and living the life and finding a happiness and truth and a peace within oneself, and as regards religion, do you think there has to be a ritual attached to it, to the extent that, I mean, you can pray anywhere, I'm sure you believe that, and you don't have to go to Mass every week?
Sure.
The church
well,
is there.
To me, I go to Mass every day, actually.
Okay.
And the reason why is that at that retreat, I went to confession, but I also received the Eucharist. I was never brought up as a Catholic, but I said a simple prayer, and I just said, if this is truly you in the Eucharist, Lord, show me. And as I received Jesus on that day, I think that was my taste of heaven. I knew that was God. And the reason why I go to Mass every day is because I need his power. I need his strength. And, you know, I think people get it wrong. They think that we have to give up something by going to Mass or going to church on a Sunday or during the week. To me, the more we give God in our prayer, in our time, the more God can bless us. And there's nothing he can give us more than when he gives us his body, blood, soul and divinity. He's everything. That's what he gives me every time I go to Mass. Mm-hmm. I truly believe that he gives me everything he has. So it's not about the ritual. It's about me receiving God.
Okay. Now, you're there in Airfield for the full week, aren't you?
We are, yeah. We're okay. there every day, and we're there at 10 o'clock in the morning. We have a service, and then 7:30 in the evening is our main service. Mm-hmm. And there's a different member of the team speaking at each of the events, and I'll be speaking again on Friday night. So anyone who's about, please come along to any of the services. You're more than welcome. And I think it may really change your life.
Okay. Now, in the course of the mission when you're there, is there a prompt for questions and answers? Does it become a quick Q&A?
Well, to be honest, a lot of people, we have a lot of gatherings afterwards where you're on the door and every question you can think of is asked. Mm-hmm. So even though there's not a set question and answers, okay, anyone is welcome to come and ask us anything. In the schools, when we go into schools or prisons, I always have a sort of question and answers. I love it. I think it's very fruitful, you know.
And do you think it's very hard to get through to the younger people today? Or
not at all. I think there's an incredible openness in the young people.
Great.
You know, when you talk to them about using their gifts to really help the people in their community, there's an inbuilt sort of trigger that's sparked. And you see all the boys, they put their chests out. They want to be that person who's helping people around them. And, you know, with the girls, it's the same. There's always that caring sort of part of them. And as soon as you touch on it, they want to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. And also, every one of us has that desire to know that we're loved. And I think with the young people, it's no different.
We're just thinking in some ways about, as well, about a lot of the stuff that can come into your heart or into your mind. It can be fleeting. For instance, you can be fairly, well, you can be comfortable. I don't mean well off, but you can be comfortable. You can have enough to eat and stuff like that. And then you see someone, if something minor happens to you, seems catastrophic, but it really is minor. And yet you see someone else worse, you'll say, well, it could be worse.
Yeah.
Look at that. But it doesn't last very long.
No.
And a lot of life, especially for young kids with celebrity and all like that, it's hard to break them away from that.
It's very interesting you say that, Noel, because I remember I was in a school in Liverpool and there was some ethos in this school I'd never seen before. You know, the kids seemed to have such an inbuilt sort of respect. And I just said to the headmaster, what's different about your school than all the schools I've been in? And he says, I make sure that at least once in their schooling, every kid in this school goes to Lourdes and works with the disabled. And every one of them sees that no matter if they're poor in Liverpool, there's people who are worse off than them. Mm-hmm. And it changes their life. And I think it's spot on that when we see and work and live with someone who's really in a lot of pain, that makes us realise how blessed we are. Mm-hmm. And we want to help that sort of person, and we want to give. And you know, Mother Teresa, the reason why she was so happy is she never stopped giving. And the reason why her sisters are so happy, they never stopped giving. And what I've learned in life is the more I give, the more I receive. It isn't about me taking to receive, it's about me giving. You know, we was talking about the riots, wasn't we,
yes,
before?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I work with a lot of kids who have been in a lot of trouble with the police. One thing I always say to them, I never enjoyed a penny which I got from crime. I never enjoyed a penny of it.
Mm-hmm.
But now I enjoy life. I enjoy, you know, because my money's earned honestly, I enjoy it and I love life. Whereas I think when you're corrupt or there's a tarnish on that money that you get because you're taking it, you will never enjoy it. Whereas if when you're giving, when you're helping people, there's no better way of putting your head on the pillar, knowing you've brought others to a greater sense of their wealth.
That's a perfect time of year, I must say. For
absolutely.
For
like Scrooge says it all, really, doesn't it?
Okay, it does indeed. Again, you're on there every morning at 10:30, is it? And then
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock and then
and 7:30.
And 7:30 in the evening. So after Airfield, John, where's it for you?
Well, we go on Sunday, I go to New York. So that's my next stop.
Okay, some great work being done there, and just see Father Tom there, just meditating himself there. Thanks very much, Sean.
God bless you, Noel. God bless all your listeners, and a Merry Christmas to them all.
And I hope to talk to you again next year.
Please, God.
Thanks very much.